Classic Country, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS. Good morning, this is Brady Safranik, and this is Community Speaks, and it's being brought to you by The Prescription Shop on Fort Street. Stop by The Prescription Shop, where they are so much more than just prescription medication. Joining me this morning is Johnson County Emergency Management Coordinator, Marilyn Conley. Marilyn, thank you for taking the time today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, first on the list here is new uniforms for emergency management.
What? No, now,
we were talking a little bit before we came on the air here, so I just kind of had to prod Marilyn there a little bit.
My eyes got as big as silver dollars just then.
Someone had mentioned to her maybe she should wear a uniform, and so I just had to have a little fun
with
her.
So call me up or put a notice on the Johnson County Emergency Facebook page of whether I should wear some kind of identifying clothing so that people will know.
So everyone knows who you are.
I do the emergency man. Speaking of the Facebook page, though, while I threw that, see how I sagged? Sagged into that?
That's a good one.
Sagged into that. I need more people to like the page just because that's what we're using a lot to send out updates and different things. And Marcy Schuler from the hospital has been really good at helping me with the Facebook page and the public
sharing the post and stuff like that.
Public information officer, and
sure,
it's been really nice. But I'm not that great at Facebook. But I think if I understand it correctly, people want to get notices on the Facebook. If they go to the Johnson County Emergency Management Facebook page, do they like it? They like it.
Yeah, you click the button that says like, right. and then when you make a post, it'll show up in their newsfeed.
That's what I need people to do.
Yeah, so go like the page.
Click the like page.
Yep, click the like button.
Okay.
Find out how many people like you.
That's good. And then like emergency management.
Yeah.
I doubt if there'd be too many. Same way with the Twitter. There's a @JohnsonEMC Twitter page too, and I don't use it very often. I don't know how many.
Tweet?
I'm not a tweeter. If more people would like to see tweets from emergency management, I will do my best to try to do that.
There you go.
But I'm old.
Well, the good thing about the social media posts is that the people that use Facebook and Twitter, you know, they get that stuff sent right to them. They don't have to go search out your page. It comes right to them. So that is the nice part about that for people that want to like the page. Just a side note, I've liked your page.
Well, thank you.
So maybe we can get some more people to like it. And when I see something, I usually share it too. So anyone that is friends with me on Facebook, which isn't that many people, but they see it as well.
That's good, because the more we can, the thing about it is you can get accurate, timely information. I want to stress accurate.
Accurate's a good thing to stress because, you know, Facebook has all those question marks around it and it's news content.
I hope I don't get...
But local stuff isn't that way.
Good.
That's just national stuff.
That would be embarrassing to lose your Facebook page as an emergency manager.
I don't think Russia's going to interfere to tell them
they
that
might.
Johnson County Emergency Management is saying something they're not saying. But
they could. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. So go ahead and like
right,
the page
get
on with their Twitter thing as well. And Marilyn will keep you up to date on that
stuff. Yeah, we better get serious here. So... one of the things I wanted to talk about today is we're working on the mitigation plan update. It has to be done every 5 years, and we sent out a survey, a social media survey, and in Johnson County we got 65 responses.
Okay.
Which we beat Sheridan.
Well, there you go.
So that's, but I was happy to see we got at least 65. That gives you a pretty good idea of what people are thinking as far as.
So this was on Facebook? Is that what you're saying? You sent it on Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
So it shows that 65 people have too much time on their hands during the day as they're flipping through Facebook? No, I'm just
kidding. It shows that people are really interested in emergency management. And there was also an online, it's sort of like a monkey survey kind of thing that went out that you could go online to a specific website and type that in. Anyway, we got our threats and hazards identified, and then now what we do is we take those and we look at different things in our community of what, under those hazards and threats, what are some projects that we could take on to mitigate, hence mitigation planning, mitigate those particular issues. And you involve the whole community, and we've had a couple of meetings and invited the community. The last community meeting we had, I had two people from the community, which one county didn't have anybody from the community. So we're doing
better than most.
We're doing better
two
than some.
Two times better than they are.
Maybe not as good as a lot, but better than some. And I appreciate all the public input and different things we can get anytime, really. I mean, what's the deal is if you see something, say something.
Yep.
Well, we had a gentleman from the public last week talk to me about he'd been up in the canyon up here and was looking at what the potential was for a slide off down into Clear Creek. And if that were to happen, then we might cut off our water flow to the city diversion piece. I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but it's things like that. And we could use, when we get this plan done, then when mitigation money becomes available, then we've already kind of talked about, well, what are our priority planning mitigation projects and things, and we'll be a little further ahead and able to take advantage of some of that funding when it comes available. So it's really important for the public to participate anytime. And we take those threats and hazards and we throw them into what's called a threat hazard risk assessment. We're working on that now. And when I say we, I mean it's a local emergency planning committee, and it's made up of private sector, school district, fire, EMS, law, elected officials. It's open to the public. And those are the second Thursday of every month, unless I have to cancel one. But they're scheduled for the second Thursday of every month, 9:00 in the morning at the City Fire Hall. And people are welcome to attend those. And this last one we had a business owner and a private sector person come, which was very helpful, because you get tunnel visioned into your first responder efforts, and you don't necessarily reach out to what the ripples are past that.
Sure.
So it's really nice to have the public there, and that process, that analysis, is put into it's a website workbook from FEMA, Homeland Security.
Sure.
And then that goes to the state, and then the state rolls that up into their national required threat and hazard assessment. And the whole idea is that if something big were to happen, that in Washington, D.C., where all the gurus are, they can pull up your threat and hazard risk assessment, and they can go, oh, here's what they're capable of, here's what they're not capable of. We'll try to build our capabilities where we can help rural areas if something happens.
Yeah, well, that should be good. Be
the theory prepared. Is good.
Be prepared.
Yeah.
Sort of a Boy Scout theory.
Mm-hmm. It's a good theory. But, and then, you aren't having to ask me very many questions. I'm just...
Hey, you're just rolling.
That's okay. On and on. Of course, you got to have a budget to do these things.
Very true.
So right now, the emergency management office, I just had my budget hearing in front of the commissioners last week.
Pay yourself $1 million next year?
Oh.
Not quite?
Dead silence there. I'll just be happy to have a paycheck.
Yeah. When you go through the budget, what are some of the things that that come up that you have to sort of prepare for in emergency management?
Well, in my budget, to explain how that works, runs like $85,000. Half of that is covered by the Emergency Management Performance Grant, which is a federal grant that I apply for every year. And within that grant, of course, grants are not free. There's all kinds of things you have to do.
Strings come with them.
Yeah. You sort of feel like a puppet sometimes being jerked around on the strings. But it saves the general fund $40,000 a year. That doesn't have to come out of the local. Comes out of our pockets. Grants are not free. Comes out of our pockets somewhere, but it does not come out of the local general county fund for half of my budget.
Okay.
And then we have things, of course, to run the office. Phones, internets, laptops. I have the emergency operating center that's wrapped up in that budget, which means monitors, computers, radios, those sort of things. And then maintenance for the sirens. And those are some of the bigger...
What about like your exercise drills that you run? Is that coming out of your budget as well there?
Yes.
Yeah, because you do a handful of those each year, right?
Yes, and they get more expensive all the time, it seems like.
Yeah. Everything does.
And we're required, because of the Emergency Management Performance Grant, I'm required to do 4 types of an exercise, whether it's a drill or a tabletop or a workshop or just a educational session, they call it, session drills, workshops, tabletops, and then 1 full scale a year.
Okay.
And the full scale one is the one that takes up a lot of time to do. This year, our full scale will be in KC.
And of course, all these things are incredibly important so that when something actually happens, that you know, you're prepared for it.
That's the idea.
Otherwise, everyone throws up their arms like, what do we do now?
Get people, they practice in our local area, they do stuff together all the time. Whereas a bigger urban area, unless they do those exercises, they don't necessarily know who each other are.
Sure.
So they like you to know who you're working with before you have to work with them.
It always helps.
Yeah, they say don't trade business cards during the event.
Yeah, you know? Right.
It's better to know who you got and what you're working with beforehand.
Absolutely.
So those are in there. Training. Go to some trainings. Conduct some trainings. Sponsor some trainings. We just did we called it a resource unit leader workshop, an 8-hour training, so that we can get people trained up to know how to do the paperwork and things to manage resources that come in during an event. So if we had a big enough event, we'd have somebody that knew how to order, because there's a whole process there into bringing your resources in to help you with an event. Fire guys have it down good. Other than fire, we're kind of weak on it outside of the fire departments, so we're trying to build that capability up right now.
Sure.
I think those are the biggest budget line items I have.
Okay. And so how long are you in your budget meetings, or when will you have, is there a deadline to when I got to have my budget set by this point?
Commissioners will do that, and they'll usually do it like the middle of July.
Okay.
There's a statute, set by statute, a date they have to finalize the budgets. But typically by this time in June, the end of June, we'll know what we are probably going to be operating on, because they still could need to cut things. We have a budget line for our radio communications too, that I keep an eye on. If we need to, something happens to our Wendy site or Pumpkin or Pat, wherever our communication sites are, Then we have some money set aside to kind of deal with those if we need to on an emergency basis. I keep track of that.
That's always nice, because if a problem arises and you can't afford to fix it, then you have bigger problems.
Oh, yes.
So it's nice to have that little nest egg of money there for
that. And radio, and it's not a lot, but it's enough that we could probably at least get started or use it as a match for try to find some grant funding somewhere to help cover the cost. And then I also have two other grants that I manage, Homeland Security grants. Those we use to do things like purchase equipment that we can't otherwise afford. That when we do this threat and hazard thing, it identifies where our weaknesses are. Then we can go in and request funding to help with equipment and training and different things that would help get us better at filling that gap.
Sure.
So there's some funds for that.
And then recently here, and are you finished with the grants and the budget?
Yes, okay. Go ahead, ask.
I didn't want to cut you off, but I wanted to jump in and see if I could ask a question here this morning. just in the recent past here, last couple of weeks, we've had a couple of, if not all of Buffalo, most of Buffalo involved in a power outages. And just curious as to if we know the causes of them. I had heard one might have been a squirrel that might have bit into a line and fried himself and the whole town. Is that true?
I can't verify that at all. It reminds me of that commercial about the cable or whatever it is.
Sure.
And it's $99, but what if a squirrel gets up and it's $99? Well, the reason I bring that up is because this little recent power outage cost residences and businesses way more than $99. And I wanted to talk about this because I want people to think about it, because we've been talking and talking about long-term power outages and what it will do to our community. And is there any way, small, big, large things that we can do to help lessen the pain of that?
Sure.
Because we can't stop it particularly, but if we could lessen the pain of it while it's happening and afterwards, that would be tremendous. And so we did do a tabletop exercise, long-term power outage exercise, a while back, and then this power outage hit from lightning, I believe, is what caused the big one.
Okay. That was the one a couple weeks ago.
Right.
The one last week, it was sunny and beautiful, and
yeah,
suddenly just went...
And that one last week, I'm not sure, but it did cause some people to lose their TVs and things.
Sure.
And it's more like when the power comes on than when the power goes off that apparently causes more damage.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware of that.
Don't quote me on that.
Too late.
Don't repeat that, anybody. Check with your linemen and your electrical people to verify that. But seems like those power surges tend to do more.
That's what fries out your electronics.
Damage. Yeah. And that's what happened during the power outage where we were without power for, it was between 4 and 5 hours.
Yeah.
A lot of businesses were closed, but restaurants, gas stations, and those kind of things weren't. It was right during the busy time for them.
Exactly.
And from just the brief kind of like talking to people, not really an official assessment, from computers to hot tubs to, I didn't even think about hot tubs, but it fried their components in their hot
tub. That's interesting.
So that was expensive for them to repair.
I'll bet.
Computers. When I got estimates from people, grocery stores, and I still haven't got an exact estimate from the grocery stores, but one guess estimate was like $3,000.
Well, I was going to say, when you're talking about grocery stores, you've got the food and obviously all your dairy products that can go bad in 5 hours. You know, some of it could go bad in 5 hours. You know, maybe 5 hours isn't enough to make most of it go bad, but some of it certainly could. And like you said, then, you know, everything runs on electricity now. Everything runs on power, paying for stuff. I mean, unless you have exact cash, they might not even be able to open the register without power. So
most of the registers have backup power on them for about 15, maybe 20 minutes at the max.
So basically they can finish the exchange that they're involved in when the power goes out. And then that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it affects a lot of things.
And just the number that I came up with, real rough, but it was like in the 20s of thousands of dollars. Just adding up what people told me, well, it's going to cost us blah, blah, blah. Just the people that I talked to, and I'm sure there's more out there.
Sure.
It was running in the $20,000 range for that five-hour power outage. And what I think it was one of the grocery stores, what happened is compressors on the freezers or refrigeration units, they went out. So they were looking at having to buy new equipment.
Well, that's always the thing, like you had mentioned before, when the power goes out and then comes back on, a lot of times some of your electrical equipment doesn't come back. It got fried out. And whether it was when it went out or came on, either way, it got fried out. So, but what people also might want to think of, based on your comment there, if the power goes out, unplug stuff so that when it comes back on, it doesn't get that surge and maybe you save your equipment.
When it starts lightning and thundering and carrying on like it did the other night.
Yeah.
Oof, it's best just to go and unplug. You're right. Unplug your, especially your electronics, TVs. Flip the switch to your hot tub.
Speaking of, I have a quick story I'll share with you about this. I was, maybe 10 or 12 years old, and I was vacationing up in northern Michigan, and the house we were staying in got struck by lightning. And I was upstairs, so I didn't see this, but almost everyone else in the house witnessed it. Downstairs, as the house got struck, a fireball shot out of the TV, like basically looked like it came out of the screen and shot across the room. And unfortunately for me, I didn't get to see that. I was upstairs, but you know, the house kind of showed. I mean, you knew when it got hit. You knew the house got hit. And it's an old house. There's not even insulation, and it's just, you know, kind of a cabin. But yeah, that was interesting. So certainly if there's a storm and you can unplug stuff, it's much safer.
Yeah, that's a good story, because that does happen. We had, where I lived as a kid, we had the phone knocked. It was an old-fashioned phone on the wall, and the lightning would hit, and it'd blow the phone off the wall. And I mean, the appliances.
Yeah, people always think, I'll never be somewhere where you get struck by lightning. It happens. It happens.
We did have Tim Troutman from the National Weather Service over a while back, and we went to the schools and senior center and some different places like Road and Bridge. And you'll see now on the ballpark fence and the swimming pool area out at the fairgrounds, there'll be some signs posted that say, when thunder roars, go indoors. Kind of a, here, if you hear thunder and see lightning, I mean, you need to get...
Don't stand on your roof with a golf club up in the air. That's a bad idea.
No. Or maybe even metal bleachers, or out on the ball field, at the swimming pool.
So I'm not safe because the soles of my shoes are rubber? That doesn't save me from getting struck?
I don't know.
I think it does.
I think you probably want to just use the other theories more so than rubber soled shoes.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, while we're speaking of the weather and some of the damage it can cause, we've got a little bit of weather in the forecast here over the next few days. And today, we were talking a little bit before we went on air, while the threat is not a high threat, there is still a threat of the tornadoes possibly forming during this afternoon storms.
Yeah, the Homeland Security, FEMA, just sent out a little map of today's convective outlook for today. And in our area, they have it identified as a low risk, but I just want people to keep their eyes on the sky.
Yeah, we've seen them already this year. There was four of them, I think, in the same day over in Gillette a couple weeks back. And then the one or two that were down by Laramie, a little north of Laramie, that were pretty bad ones. Luckily, they didn't find too many structures in their path.
But no, and we had the one up here on the mountain as well.
Where was that
one at? Seems like they called that an EF2, maybe.
Okay.
It was up behind Dull Knife.
All right.
Came in from...
And it's fairly rare at the higher elevations, is it not?
Yeah, supposed to be.
That's what I thought in Laramie, too. Laramie sits 7,200 feet above sea level, and I know this one was slightly north of there, but you know, that's pretty high to see a tornado
as well. They said they projected the winds at 120 miles an hour up there, kind of back off the gold mine road. Don't go up there. Some of that's private, big share of that's private property up there. Okay. So it's not like take a tour and go up there and see the damage, because you'll be on private property and that's not
good.
Kosher, really.
Sure.
But it came across from Washakie, and there's a little piece of Bighorn County in there as well. But it knocked down, I think the estimate was like 1,000 trees maybe.
Okay.
If I remember right, don't quote me on that one either.
Don't quote her on anything.
Don't quote me ever. But yeah, so we just had one up here. That was the same time as the Gillette one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Same afternoon.
So just to keep people aware that the storms now the rain we're going to get with these aren't. The streams have gone down. I know the last time we had you on here, the streams were really high, and we were actually going into a weekend of more rain coming and that sort of situation. But the streams seem to have calmed down now, so are you guys not expecting the rain this week to really get things into flood level?
No. We could always have one of those freaky flash flood events, you know. But right now, it looks like everything's kind of holding its own, and the streams are running just like they're supposed to.
Sure. Yeah, we like it when that happens.
Yeah, so we're pretty good there. Now we're going into starting to look at lightning, thunder, bad hailstorms, high winds, and fire.
Yeah, it's nice and wet now, but before you still drive around, it still looks green. It's that, very pretty time of year around here before things really dry out and then we hit the fire danger.
And, of course, down around Albany County, they've got the big fire going down there, and that's in a lot of beetle kill.
Yeah.
So it's pretty nasty little fire, and hopefully we won't have that this year up here. We've been really fortunate the last, 3 years or so.
Yeah, it was about 3 years ago we had the one right here just west of town here.
Yeah, West Range.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was in late. Don't quote me on this. It was like end of October, first part of November,
maybe? I would
have
guessed September, but yeah, it was late.
It was late in the season. I know the fire guys had kind of closed up, so the helicopters and those kind of things weren't readily on standby at that time.
Sure.
So, anyway, if you're out and about, have fun, but keep an eye on the sky and be careful.
Yeah, if you see some clouds starting to swirl about, maybe head for home. And, head for home
or
instead
the car
of,
or yeah. cabin yeah. or something.
Right, something that moves faster than the tornado does.
Right.
Talking with Johnson County Emergency Management Coordinator Marilyn Connolly. Marilyn, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me, Brady, and thanks to Prescription Shop for hosting.
Absolutely. The Prescription Shop, they are the supporters of Community Speaks here, as they have been for a long time. Keep those dials tuned, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS.